Welcome to Seagull Eagle, the podcast where two rivals meet, Brighton and Hove Albion and Crystal Palace. One has seagulls and scenic coastal views, the other has pigeons and an Aldi.
This week at Palace, we're still unbeaten, just beat the champions and are second in the Premier League, which means we've officially lost touch of reality and started Googling Champions League anthem ringtones.
This week at Brighton, we put six past Barnsley and then wandered over to Stamford Bridge to bag 3 points.
Plus, we'll round up this week's drama on and off the pitch and preview what lies ahead for both sides.
This is Seagull Eagle.
We are Champions League. Say we are God. Champions League.
It's really?
We are Champions. No? Is it too early?
I think it's a little early, mate. It's a little early. Hello, Andy.
How are you, Neil? Are you all right? You had a good week?
Yeah, I'm all right, mate. Yeah, not too bad. I feel a lot better this week. Two wins in a week always helps, doesn't it?
Well, you should do. It looks like you turned the corner a bit, haven't you?
Well, we'll see.
Back
we'll
on
see.
The up.
As for you guys, blimey.
I'm still on cloud nine, mate. Best day out ever. I think that's what my boy said yesterday, actually. Best day out ever.
And you've won the FA Cup.
Yeah. And it really felt like that. Yeah. We'll talk about it later. But yeah, no, look, it's been a good week. We got loads to talk about this week.
Oh, it's going to be action-packed, this one. We need to cram it all in. Where are we going to start?
Well, should we do, maybe in the first half, we'll do the two Premier League games. We'll start with yours. And then second half, we can talk about your historic win over Barnsley. And we'll kind of mop up the rest of the fixtures to come. I think Palace have got a game in Europe. Have you got one as well? But I'm sure you'll be playing another League One team in the Carabao Cup. Oh, no, you've got Arsenal, haven't you?
Ooh. Anyway.
Yeah.
Chelsea and Hove Albion, 1. Brighton, 3.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a really lovely day out at Stamford Bridge. Mate, there's something about beating Chelsea, obviously, for obvious reasons, but it feels so good. And even better at Stamford Bridge.
Do you class them as a rival then? Now, like, as in, is there...
I don't class them as a rival. I class it as a grudge.
Okay.
You know, it's different. I think as a fan, it just hurts and it's felt wrong for quite a while that they keep coming back and taking our players.
It's a bit like they're kind of stalking you, aren't they, for players? And it's a bit like catching your stalker or something. Yeah. Or it's a bit of a weird one, isn't it?
But it is. We get the money for it and all that, and everyone looks at us and goes, oh, you've done it again, Brian, it's great. But ultimately, as a fan, you don't want to see this. You don't want to see one team just coming and taking everyone, not just your players. Obviously, we've been through it before. Everyone knows what's happened. So, yeah, any time we have an opportunity to beat Chelsea, and let's be honest, it's 3 in a row now we beat Chelsea. We beat them twice.
Is it?
Yeah, we beat them twice at the Amex last season with the FA Cup win as well. So 3 in a row against Chelsea, which I'm very pleased about. But even better, Stamford Bridge.
Well, congratulations, Neil. Let me be the first on this podcast, seeing as I'm the only other person in the room, to congratulate you on this historic win. Tell us how they did it.
Okay, so lineups quite straightforward, which I was really pleased about. There was only one change from the Spurs game.
Oh.
Last week I was talking about the concept of actually having the same starting 11 and getting the team starting to gel.
Does help.
One change, Gomez, after his exploits in the week, gets the nod ahead of Gruda.
As he should, to
be fair. As he should, absolutely. So, well, do you know what, actually? I think it was a game of two halves, as the old stereotype.
One where you were playing against the right amount of people, and then the other where you were playing against less.
Yeah, mate.
Because they were all over you, weren't they, in that first half?
I would say, what's interesting, actually, I would say they weren't all over us in some respects. What I would say is it was quite naturally, in the first 30 minutes, absolutely, Chelsea had the ball and they were going for it, which is totally understandable. And it was a little bit of a backs against the walls scenario. But also at the same time, I think tactically, I think they were ready for it. I think Brighton were ready for it. I think they were very much clear that they were going to press from the front, Brighton, and try and stop Chelsea from creating too many chances. The work rate from the front three or four was so high in that first half. And I can understand why Gomez is in there in that sense as well. He is boundless. He has so much energy. With him and Rutter, Matoma and Minta up that sort of top four, really trying to shut down Chelsea. They just worked so hard, and I was very impressed by the work rate within that first 30 minutes. The other things that, you know, you have to think about was we didn't have many attacks in that first half, nothing to really shout about. We did have our own little battles on the pitch, which was quite fun to watch. We had Veltman and Cucurella. That was just really fun to watch. Veltman just giving him little pushes and pulls when he had the chance, and just, you know, giving him lots and lots of little aggro all the time. But the main event, I would say, for that first half was watching Van Hecker come up against João Pedro, obviously, for the first time since the two had that training ground bust up last season. So it was pretty much like watching JP just every chance he gets on the heels of João Pedro, just kicking and pushing him to the ground. Dunk joined in from time to time as well, which is always good fun as well.
Brilliant.
Just kept him really quiet. And I think João Pedro probably had his worst game for Chelsea. You could see that. Look, Albion were defending pretty well. If it wasn't for like a really, I don't know if you saw the goal when it went in. It was 25 minutes in.
I did.
Very unlucky deflection on James's cross, because the cross literally hit, Matoma slides in to get the ball. He hits it and it hits hits Matoma's leg and zooms over the top of all our defenders to obviously the back post where they put it in at the back of the goal.
And I mean, I saw the goal and I celebrated it.
I'm sure you did, mate. I'm sure you
and
did.
And I thought, do you know what? Truthfully, like, jokes aside and bias aside and all that, I thought, actually, I didn't really feel at that point that you deserved anything more than that.
No, I agree.
Figured that was the way the match was going, mate. And,
yeah.
And by the way, obviously, I don't want to ruin your review, but we all know what happens. And I think from my perspective, I'm not saying you only won the game because of that situation. Mm. What I am saying is that situation happened and it very much helped you. And I think it shifted things greatly. I don't think without that situation, you would have walked away with 3 points. I think you would have been lucky to walk away with one. But anyway, you carry on.
No, I don't think we can work out exactly what would have happened if. But
no.
I do understand your point. And certainly, look, at half-time, 0-0 would have been a great scoreline for us.
Yeah.
But, you know, 1-0 going down, 1-0 at halftime, it wasn't the end of the world. We hadn't played great. Well, I say we haven't played great. We hadn't played great offensively.
Mm.
We'd been working really hard, and defensively we'd done okay. We'd limited them to 2 shots from outside the box and the goal.
Yeah.
So it wasn't the end of the world.
But you have got this lovely ability, though, of turning it around in that second half, coming back from behind. So even though I look at, and of course it's like the second score I always look at on that sheet, Neil, right?
Yeah.
On a Saturday afternoon at half time. And I've learnt now, I'm not stupid enough to, you know, kind of take that as a given at half time. Mm. I know damn well what you guys are capable of. So
And the first half, look, we had 30% possession, right? We had an XG of 0.1.
Possession means nothing.
Well, exactly. Yeah. You're an absolute connoisseur at that, aren't you? 0 shots on target, you know, it wasn't much, but we hadn't lost the game at that point.
No.
We were still in it, and I think that's important.
Well, it's important to say that if you go only going 1-0 down, and even though you had a bit of a helping hand in it in the second half, you still left yourself with not too big a mountain to climb. So it all adds up, right?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think that was what the case was. We hadn't lost the game at half time.
Yep.
We were in it still. Second half, we continue with this really hard work up the front, pressing. And actually, the sending off comes from our pressing. It comes from that situation where, you know, Gomez and Matoma chasing down the defenders, makes them make a mistake, and suddenly Gomez, you know, he's broken free, he's in on goal, and then Trevor Chalobah comes up and says, hang on, hold my beer, and tries to pull back Gomez. Now,
well, and also trips him, I think, at the same time.
Do
you know what, Neil? Like, again, fair play. I agree with you. From this point onwards, it was almost a bit, for me, it was almost a bit like two things collided. You'd kind of found your route through and they got a man sent off whilst you were doing that. I feel like the momentum was already starting to go your way at that point. And then, of course, Chalobah, obviously, I don't think you can particularly argue. I'd love to, but I don't think you can particularly argue with that. And also, here's the thing, confession, I actually believe that if Chalobah hadn't have taken him out, he would have scored.
Oh.
There's no doubt.
I agree. There's no doubt that the ball was completely there, ready for the shot.
Yep.
And so, look, I'm annoyed that the ref, again, just didn't see it. how the ref didn't look at that and go, that must be... The thing about this ref, and I'll talk about him in a minute a bit more because he annoyed me through the whole game. He was one of those refs that I talked about last season that he waits for VAR to make the decisions.
Mm.
Everything is play on, play on, play on, and then we hold up, right? This decision, right, this Trevor Chalobah pulling down of Gomez, do you know how long it took to actually make that decision?
2.5 minutes.
4 minutes, Andy.
I thought I was being generous there.
Yeah.
Four?
4 minutes. I clocked it on purpose. I could
do a lot
it.
In 4 minutes.
Twice.
Yeah.
Look, 4 minutes, mate. Crazy that it should take that long.
Mm.
We come to the decision. Finally, they make it. Red card, down to 10 men. And Albion then, you're quite right, really sort of take over the game. It was 50-50 the first 10 minutes of the second half, but actually that really helped us. We had no shots on target up until that point. We hadn't created loads of clear-cut chances. We worked hard, but there wasn't much going on. The good thing is that as soon as the red card came up, Fabian Hürsler straight away thought, I need to start making some changes here. He made one quick change, and that was the one person that we had on a booking, Joel Veltman, he took straight off.
See, that's interesting. You don't often see that.
No, he made it straight away. He put Wiefer on, thankfully, coming back from injury. And he knew we were going to have more of the ball. So what I'll do is I'll put a midfielder on that sits in right back and comes into midfield. Plus, Veltman's on a booking. Let's take him off. Let's not have any of our players on a booking at that point, just in case. Really sensible. Yeah. Put him straight on. Gruder, Welbeck also come on a little bit later in the game. This time, though, for Belaiba and Matoma. Finally, he's noticing that Matoma is not creating what he should be doing. He doesn't let him just languish out there on the wing.
I think he listened to last week's pod, mate.
I've got a feeling we might have an extra listener, mate. Yeah,
that's two now.
Yeah. My point being that he made some changes to really try and ensure that we had the ball constantly. Chelsea didn't get out. They really didn't. We kept pushing and pushing and pushing. The big change that he made tactically was switching Yankuba Minta, still our brightest spark.
He was brilliant, by the way.
Again, he was brilliant.
Yeah.
But they switched him over to the left wing. Did it a couple of times last season when we needed a goal.
Yeah.
Kept the width completely. So he was way out on the left wing on his natural left side. And you could see the instruction. Yankuba, use your speed, get past that defender and get that ball across. We had players like Gomez, we had players like Welbeck, obviously up front then for Gruder. There was lots of players bombing into the box. And obviously the first goal we get back, the equaliser for Welbeck, is that brilliant cross from Yankuba Minta, and suddenly we're 1-1. You know,
is that
a fantastic head.
Correct me if I'm wrong, is this the one where Minta is pressing and he basically wrestles the ball? Or is that the second goal?
No, that's the third goal.
That's the third goal. Yes. I don't know, I was keeping my eye on Minta and I out of all the Brighton players, and obviously not being a Brighton fan, watching a Brighton game, you tend to kind of look for a player to focus on or whatever as opposed to the whole thing. I think Minta was the one that just... I loved his intensity. I loved how quick he broke, how intense the pressing was throughout that whole game. It was just really impressive.
His mentality, like he's still young and he makes silly mistakes sometimes, but his mentality is he's really passionate.
Yeah, you can tell.
And he works so hard at every part of his game that he's getting better and better every week. And, you know, if he continues along this path... Unfortunately, I will say it out loud, but he could be the next big one to go, you know, because he's becoming really good really quickly. So, look, we're 1-1, and realistically, only one team wins it then, you know, because we have got the ball, we're keeping the ball, we're all over them in that sense. Chelsea can't really get out, which is interesting to watch as well. Chelsea at Stamford Bridge not being able to get out. Even, I appreciate we've got the extra man, but Brighton don't always take advantage of the extra man.
Oh, it's not always a given, is it, Neil? I mean, it helps, don't get me wrong, but you've got to get the tactics right. So it sounds like your manager did.
So the next problem and the next issue that I have with the referee comes just after our equaliser.
Poor guy, man. He's just doing his job, Neil. Leave him alone.
Well, then he needs to do it better. Minte almost gets decapitated at the far post. I mean, did you see it?
Is this the Gusto one?
I mean, unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy, right? So the ref, again, he sees the kung fu kick from Gusto And
I don't know if it was a kung fu kick.
Well, it was pretty much close.
It was a high foot.
I thought he was playing for Millwall. Put it that way. So
wow,
it was that bad. Mintesh goes to the ground, having been kicked in the face,
allegedly.
And VAR have a look at it and say there's no conclusive evidence that there was contact.
Do you know why, Neil?
Why is that, mate?
Because they looked at it very closely on camera on multiple angles. And these are professionals at their job, Neil. And they established that, in fact, Minte is not only a brilliant footballer, as I've just described, but also a wonderful actor. Made the most of... Look, put it like this, mate. Yes, when you look at the slow action replay, he does kind of do this immediate action as he feels the air go past his head from the boot, as anyone would, well, because he's thinking, I'm just about to get hit.
So that's...
But there's no blood.
Okay, okay.
And also, he gets up pretty quick and carries on the rest of the game quite well, doesn't he?
Okay, okay. So let's go back a step, right? So there is no way Minte doesn't head that ball on target and put it at least near the goal. Does, if he thinks there's no foot coming on his head.
Does Gusko get the ball, though?
No, Minte heads the ball. But he's heading the ball suddenly with his eyes shut because he can see a foot half an inch away from his face.
Oh, so it is half an inch away as opposed to in his face. Then.
When he has his eyes open, yeah. And yeah. Then he closes his eyes and it goes closer.
To be brutally honest with you, Neil, I don't know. No one will ever know. No. There's a situation in the game we'll talk about later for our one where I don't think anyone will ever know. And how is that even possible, right? When you've got goal line technology, which can tell if that ball's like crossed the line, for millimeters, and you've got like cameras all over the place, 360, that you can recreate everything. You can tell if someone's been offside by like a split hair. Yet these situations, which we're talking about today, no one knows either way.
But my point, Andy,
it's the first time I've ever heard it, though, Neil. Where, you know, when they go, there's no conclusive evidence to show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you're like, well, hang on a minute. Who's done something wrong then? Because there should be conclusive evidence one way or the other, right?
But my point is, even if there is no contact, it's still a foul. It's still, in some way, that high kick has impeded. It's dangerous play. So at the very least, it's an indirect free kick.
And that, Neil, is potentially where you got me because, yes,
it's dangerous play.
His foot was in a very high position.
Else on the pitch, they give that as a foul because they say, oh, it's dangerous play. You shouldn't have your foot up there, even if you didn't touch him.
Suddenly
in a penalty, there has to be contact. There has to be a broken skull to actually get a penalty for it. It's a joke, mate. It's a joke. That's what it is. Look,
well, it's a good job
on.
They'd already got someone sent off and that you were already on your way to a free ticket, wasn't it? Do you know what I'm saying?
I'm going to move on because I don't want to talk about VAR that much, really, but I have by the sound of things.
Calm down.
Oh, it annoys me. It really does. But I tell you what didn't annoy me.
Oh, go on.
The way Brighton played in that last 10, 15 minutes of the game.
Were you proud of them, Neil?
I was, because they kept going. More changes came on board. We put De Kuyper back on after his injury, came back at left back, and Simas came on as well, 85 minutes in, still 15 minutes to play. And it just continued the bombardment for Albion. They had the ball, they didn't let it out, they didn't let Chelsea off the hook. And, you know, 11 minutes of added time suddenly on the board. Everyone gets a boost from that, obviously. And 2 minutes into injury time, we get a corner. And this is clearly a set piece. This is clearly something they've worked on. They take it short to change the angle. And Ayari makes a fantastically whipped cross right over to the far post where there's two or three Brighton players, two of which are stopping the Chelsea players from getting any further back by blocking them, essentially. Weaver heads it across. De Kuyper, the left back, somehow, decides he'll go up for the corner as well, heads it home, 2-1. Cue scenes in the away end. Of people, limbs, the whole lot. It, you know, fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Was a good goal, to be fair.
It really was. And the best thing about all of it, mate, we're 2-1 up with 8 minutes to go and Brighton don't stop at that point. They don't sit back. They continue to press and they continue to use all their legs that they've got to stop Chelsea from playing out. Even in that injury time, they didn't let them out. And that created another goal. That created that third goal with about a minute or two left, press from the goal kick. You know, it pays off. Gruder gets the ball, edge of the box, passes in Welbeck for his second goal. Welbeck, by the way, he was in no form at all, suddenly popped up with two goals in the same game, and everyone's happy. It was a lovely little moment because he takes his shirt off and runs around, and we all know what happens when you take your shirt off.
Yep.
I think Ekitike could probably tell you what happens.
Not upset about that.
And he gets a yellow card. Obviously, he doesn't really care. He turns to the ref and he pats him on his head, which I thought was very, very funny. I'm not sure the ref enjoyed it. Yeah, I'm not sure the ref enjoyed it, but it was a very funny moment. If you ever see a still of it, it's quite funny because he's quite a short ref. Just pats him on the head. So look, I'm just really happy. 3-1 at Stamford Bridge. And for the last minute that remained, the Albion fans at the top of their voices are chanting to the Chelsea fans, "You're just a shit Brighton Hove Albion," which made me laugh even more. Overall,
I love that because it's like you're taking the mick out of yourself as well as them. That's brilliant, isn't it?
So good, so good. And look, overall, after the sending off, we had 56% possession, which is right, but we had 9 shots, 3 goals, and an XG of 1.9. So, yes, of course, the red card changed things, but I'm glad Albion actually, as I said, took the opportunity and made sure we got the 3 points. Now, I did mention a few players last week that are not in form. And I would say those players, like Belaiba, he looked a little brighter. He played in midweek as well, looked okay. So hopefully he's on the journey to recovery of getting back into form. Welbeck, obviously, scoring 2 goals, finally looked a little bit more like the Welbeck of last season.
Do you not think that was because he got the service at the latter bit of this game, which he hasn't been getting?
I do think that, Andy. I do think that. I think you're absolutely right. I think changing the structure and playing the way we played actually made Welbeck feel like a striker. And was in the box, and lo and behold, he scores goals.
I feel like he's just been a bit kind of lost up there.
This goes back to Fabian Hertzler and how he wants to play. So this might be the reason why Welbeck's not on the pitch.
Maybe Fabian Hertzler's game plan just works better with one less person when you're playing against him. Sorry, that's the last dig about 10 minutes.
That's all right, mate. I mean, look, Jorginho and Mitoma are still not in great form, I would say. Yeah. You know, they still need work to do. And Mitoma, I'm glad they took him off with, 25, 30? Well, what ended up to be about 35 minutes to go. But Mitoma, I'm wondering whether he gets dropped the next couple of games. It was a big call.
It's a massive call, isn't it?
It's a massive call.
Because he will come good again.
Oh, of course he
will. And he'll only come good by playing him.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think maybe sometimes that's good for a player just to realise they're not quite on the form that they should be. But we'll see. Minté continuing to be unstoppable and is clearly our key player, I would say. And look, 3 points. I'm happy. That's all I can say. 3 points, Stamford Bridge. And I think we've got 8 points now, which is a little healthier.
Here's a question I've got for you before move on to mine. As a stat.
Oh, yeah.
Brighton have only kept one clean sheet in their last 17 Premier League matches.
Oh, yeah.
Why is this? I mean, your ability
to
keep a clean sheet's a bit sheet, isn't it?
Clean sheets are so last year. I mean, they're just so out of fashion these days. Mm. Well, where's the fun in that? In all seriousness, I agree. We know we're going to be conceding goals. And that's the problem half the time. We know we have to score at least 2 goals to win a game. And you could see it in elements of the first half, because the way that we press means, you know, there were those moments again in the game against Chelsea in the first half where Lewis Dunk is on the halfway line. The rest of our defence are somewhere, you know, near the penalty box because, you know, the striker has brought him into midfield and he's been told he's got to follow him somewhere. So it's, and then you're trying to turn an oil tank around to get back to defence. There are always going to be problems with the style that we're playing and the players that we've got. And I think nothing's going to change, though, until we either change our tactic or change our players at the back.
Yeah.
We'll see.
But look, the main thing is, mate, you beat Chelsea. Congratulations.
Honestly, that has made my week. That really has. And that's the most important thing. I don't think we've got time for the next game. Should we just move on to the Brighton Barnsley game? Should we just move on to that one instead?
It's up to you, mate. We can talk about a mid-table team beating a League One team, or we can talk about two teams playing the Champions League spaces.
Welcome to the Seagull podcast. Oh, go on then, mate. How did it go?
Thank you.
Tell me all about it.
I'm going to start with a big statement, Neil.
Oh,
not going to muck around on this one.
Yeah, go on.
Saturday was the best game I have watched at Selhurst Park, period.
Really?
That's a big statement, isn't it?
Well, not really, because they're usually terrible games. So, I mean, I watched a lot of the highlights, and I have to admit, it looked exciting, and it looked like your guys were absolutely on song.
Oh, mate, but not only that, kind of the game itself kind of had it all, really. I think the only thing it didn't really have was, like, someone being stretched off or something like that. Although there was lots of emergencies in the stand, and obviously we hope and pray that everyone was okay. But I think, back to the game, I think it was two teams, only two, unbeaten in the Premier League, going against each other, right? So there's kind of quite a lot going into this game.
Mm.
Both teams, although in great form, I believe still a mismatch, right? You heard my preview last week. I didn't hold out much hope for this game. I figured that maybe our time might be up on our epic run, facing the Goliath of Liverpool and their superstar squad, after spending £450 million in the summer, let's not forget, right? They've opened their wallet and spent big. They're the Premier League champions, who we haven't beaten at home, Neil, since 2014.
Oh, really? I didn't know that,
right?
Actually.
So, okay. And of course, they're playing Palace, 17 games unbeaten, and records could go either way, right? They could tumble and it could be like an epic thing. But almost like the thought of going into this game as a Palace fan and the pre-game talk with kind of random strangers that I end up talking to every week before the game, it was like, we don't dare to dream what could happen if we were to beat them, because that's ridiculous. Do you get what I mean?
I totally get
it's
what
like,
you mean.
That's out the realms, right?
We're all like that as fans of lower teams that aren't the big six. I think we all think like that. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think whilst we're on this, and let's not, you know, let's put it into perspective, right? We're on this 18 now, we'll talk about it later, but 18 game run. It's not like we've won 18 games back to back, right? There's been quite a few draws in there, quite a few, you know, drab, like we talked about them. There's some ones we've just scraped through so on. But I think that, so therefore you kind of, we're not on cloud nine already. We're kind of like, surely not another one. Surely not another one. And then you get to play the champions who, let's be honest, we got away with it at the Community Shield, didn't we? As in, like, we played brilliantly.
Yeah.
We beat them on penalties, right?
Yeah.
So it's not like, oh, it's going to be a walk in the park. I 100% turned up there, and I had the chat that I had with my 12-year-old every time we go and play one of the big teams, which is, you never know, but don't get too disheartened kind of thing. Mate, the game had it all. Exciting attack from both sides. Goal line scrambles, epic saves from both keepers, probably more so from Alisson. One-on-ones, touchline dramas, VAR, last-minute goals, and this time not for Liverpool, which was lovely, and the best atmosphere in the Premier League from my perception, supercharged. It was like a cup final, Neil. That was how Selhurst Park felt. And if any of the other Palace fans listening to this were there, I'm sure you'll agree, it was like it was normally, but just on another level. I think I felt like part of something in that game. And even when it wasn't going our way, I felt like as a crowd, we had a responsibility and the players were interacting with us to go, come on, help.
Mm-hmm.
And it just really felt like we were part of something special that day. So that kind of fairy tale of that last minute goal, kind of, I don't know, it felt like it was meant to happen. It's weird to say it, Neil, but it felt like it was all part of that journey that day. It was one of them days that was just meant to happen. Anyway, look, let's get into it. Starting lineups.
Blimey. Can we get into it? It's been about 15 minutes so far and we haven't even started talking about the game.
Well, yeah, I mean, okay, let's take off the 20 minutes you were talking about the ref and then we'll, I think I've gained a bit more time.
Touché.
So starting lineups, only one change from the side that beat West Ham the previous week. Saar returned, which I was very happy about. You know my feelings on Saar. I think that we have a much higher percentage of winning a game if Saar's in that lineup. He is one of my most important players. But anyway, yeah, so that meant Saar, Pino and Mateta played in front of Wharton and Kamada, which whilst I think we've tried it for a few minutes in a game before, that's the first time that I would say our preferred five
sure.
In that kind of forward position bit were were in. And I loved it, Neil. It felt right. Yeah. It felt right. And then, of course, let's not forget, right? You got the likes of Lerma and Hughes on the bench, right? It's brilliant. Like, when are we... I mean, not the under-21 team.
Oh, you're so excited, bless you.
Yeah, because it's progress, mate. First half display was nothing short of outstanding. As I said, the best I've seen us play. The early goal from Sarr on 9 minutes came from a Kamada cross.
Yep.
Which was kind of one of the ones where we're really good at this these days, where there's kind of a cross coming in and then we like a secondary or a third header.
Yeah, yeah. Like a flick on and then there's a chance. Yeah, everyone, I mean, a lot of people are doing it. Arsenal started doing it and now everyone's copying, but it's just a good old fashioned put it in the mixer and flick it on. I mean, Arsenal in the 90s used to do it. It's so effective.
Oh, it really is. But I feel like we've practiced it. I feel like it's not like a thing that's just happened.
Oh, no,
It's, you know, even them long throws with the flick-ons, I've seen it three times this season, all with a goal. That early goal from Sarr, I think, look, he absolutely smashed it home. And from that flick-on, and Selhurst Park erupted.
Well, it's a perfect start, isn't it? It's exact from a tactical point of view as well, from the manager, you know, with your counter-attacking style. It's absolutely perfect. You get an early goal where you can sit now and wait and see what happens. I mean, to be fair, you didn't actually sit that
far
much,
from it, mate.
But the feeling of being one ahead suddenly changes it, doesn't it?
First time they've been behind this year.
Yeah.
And also, just a little funny fact here, Sarr, my mate Sarr, has scored at the Community Shield. He scored in the last game of last season at Anfield. He scored that goal against Liverpool and he scored again on Saturday. He scored 3 in 3 against Liverpool. They must hate him. Anyway, Liverpool were shaken. They don't like the intensity in the press that we were coming at them with, and our ability to break away so quick just kept catching them out. That turn, that bit from intercept to pass, wrestle it off someone from a tackle, whatever it would be, to immediately turn and it's going back the other way.
Yeah.
I think in words it would have been, oh, hang on a minute, I'm not ready. That's what I was seeing on their faces. So anyway, I think Alisson made a number of amazing saves game, right?
I agree.
And I think Sarr set up Pino, which would have made it 2-0. Pino, bless him. Oh, my God. So frustrating. I think I said it last week, right? I think he's had 10 shots on target. Had another 3 from this game. That guy could be in double figures already. And I don't think it's a lack of ability, because I think he's shooting from, you know, I think he's getting some great opportunities.
Yeah.
He's got to break his duck. That's all he's got to do. He's just got to get one goal in and I think they'll carry on flying. But he was setting up some great ones and obviously he had a one-on-one there. And I think, look, Alisson was just, he got down and it was a brilliant save. And that's why he's one of the world's best keepers, right?
I think so. I mean, the other thing to say about Jeremy Pino is he's not known for his goals in the sense that he's not a striker. You know, he's a creator. I think the last couple of seasons, he's only scored like 4 or 5 goals each season. So he's not prolific by any way, but you're not buying him to score goals. Obviously, it would be great.
Yep.
But he's there to create for everyone else, you know.
I know. He just looks like he's trying so hard to score.
Right.
You can just tell. You know, like when you got a new player in and they just want to be loved. They want to be, you know, you want to be the man. And I think it'd be better for everyone if he gets one in.
Yeah.
Because then I think he'll stop trying as well.
Yeah.
I think, and probably then play that pass or whatever it would be.
Okay.
It went straight back to the other end. Liverpool won a free kick from a Kamada foul. And Kamada took a lot of stick for that. I think everyone forgot that was shouting at him for committing that foul. They were pretty much through. If he hadn't have taken him out, it would have been 1-1. And then we had an epic save from Henderson to keep us in it. And again, it was an epic save.
He got a fingertip on it,
went onto the bar.
I thought it hit the post, yeah. I just thought it had gone straight on the post. Then the replay, he gets a hand to it and pushes it onto the post. Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. And then the chances just... I mean, this is the part of the game where I was just... I think we all had to remind ourselves. It sounds ridiculous and really kind of like... Oh, you know, how good are we? But, like, actually, how good were we? Like, we were playing Liverpool, for crying out loud. And we were just coming at them. We were all over them. Munez had a chance, which, well, in fact, he had 2 chances back-to-back. He hit it, keeper pulled out another amazing save, and then he had another header straight from it, which went over. And then Mateta got denied again by Alisson. And then Mateta, once again, had a superb chance of goal. Did you see this one? This
would have been goal shot of the season. Yeah, I saw that. That was a lovely... I was going to say a lovely finish, but you know what I mean. It was a wonderful idea. Edge of the box, curls it, and it hits the inside of the post. And I always thought it was gone in, but it had actually... It went across the goal and out the other side.
And where I see it in the main stand... like everyone around us was just, it was almost a bit like the Matrix had glitched. No one could quite work out what happened. We got up to celebrate and then all of a sudden we saw the ball kind of in behind the goal, the opposite side of the, and it was all just very confusing.
I mean, this was all the first half as well, wasn't
it? Yeah.
I don't know. What do you reckon? 3-4?
Well, I did my calculations. Yeah. And I'd worked out that if all of the decent chances from both sides had gone in, it would have been 6-2. Yeah.
So we get to half time, it's 1-0 to Palace.
Yeah, and I think at half time we were having conversations. There was a couple of the as it stands league tables being pulled up on phones going, "Oh my God, we're second. What? Nah, we can't keep it." And everyone's like, "Don't worry, it's Liverpool. It's all going to go wrong in the last minute." Yeah. You know, we know about that, how their ability to get last minute goals. And I think we were all kind of thinking, we're just going to regret not taking our chances.
Yeah.
So second half, a couple of early chances from Liverpool. But I do think that we looked really, really strong in defence. We were closing them down, didn't give them enough time to shoot. And I think pressure from Liverpool was mounting, right? And I think Isak was having his first proper game with Liverpool, wasn't he? I think this was his first proper start.
Yeah.
And he had a good couple of chances at goal, but the Palace fans were giving him some right stick, which was quite funny to see. And then at this point, Glasner made some changes over the kind of the next 10 minutes or so. He brought on Hughes for Wharton, which I think gave us a bit more legs in midfield. Wharton was having a great game, by the way, but Hughes, as you know, he's a completely different player.
And also, Wharton's just come back from injury as well. They probably want to make sure he's fit and firing for the rest of the fixtures that got coming up.
But I actually think that as well, that Glasner wanted to kind of get, I call it kind of combatability.
Yeah.
You know, he's bought the general on, like, to mix it up. And then Pino was replaced by Lerma. And I think kind of Kamada then moved into a more forward role after that. And then, of course, Nketiah, first game back from injury, came on for Sarr, who was having a brilliant game. But again, I don't think Saul was obviously exhausted.
Yeah.
So I think all these changes had a really positive impact. And Nketiah nearly scored immediately, actually, but the header went wide. It was one of them ones where, God, that was a kind of divine substitution if that had gone in immediately. Turned out kind of was anyway. And as the clock ticked on, Palace fans knew that, as I said earlier, a late goal was very much the norm for Liverpool. They've scored 6 late winners in 7 games, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of almost a prerequisite.
It's what you expect.
Yep. After a couple of close calls a few minutes earlier, Chiesa had just come on, the substitute. And the other thing we had, Neil, that the media isn't even talking about, which winds me up, the hand of God moment. Did you see it? I mean, I know that everyone in Egypt thinks Salah is a god, but like...
Like, I know what you're talking about. So this is a situation where... Well, actually, do you know what? You explain it. You're going to explain it better, I'm sure.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, the cross goes in and then Salah jumps for the ball, realises that he's only 3'5", as opposed to 6 foot something. He's miles off the ball, like trying to head it in, like a good metre. Mm. So much so that he actually manages to make contact with the ball with his hand fully elevated above his head.
Right.
So there's pictures, you know, it's a bit like the Michael Jordan logo. He's like that, with legs out. And I believe he does. There's no proof either way.
I was just about to say the same thing. I'm sure VAR said there's nothing to suggest. There's no proof to suggest that he touched it.
By the fact that the ball changes direction very near his hand, I'm pretty confident that he did touch it. It goes to VAR because obviously they score from this, right? And this is the bit why I don't really realise no one was talking about it. But he puts his hand up. He misses the ball. It then basically... The whole situation gets a bit confused because Richard is in front of him, who was going to challenge Salah, realises that he's handballed it. So then Richard then has to kind of do a diving header about half a metre off the floor, like a really low header, because he's kind of misfooted by what's going on around him. He then heads it And obviously then the Liverpool player has pretty much a free shot on target, because who's the person that's meant to be marking him? Richards.
Yeah.
So Richards has lost his man by clearing the ball. And then, of course, it goes to VAR. And then VAR didn't care and gave it anyway.
I mean, I didn't care either. I was just keeping an eye on the score, you know, like as you
bet
do.
You were.
So I was a little bit busy watching the Chelsea Brighton game, but as soon as I saw that goal go in, I was thinking, oh, finally, a little bit of luck going my way. Liverpool have turned up again. They're doing what they normally do. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
And score from a losing position. They're going to come late. They're going to do it. They may even bag a winner here, is what I'm thinking.
Well, I think it could have gone one or two ways, right? Because they got the upper hand there for a little bit.
Mm.
And it felt like they did have the momentum. But this was the point. I think Selhurst Park went very quiet, only for a second or so. And I think the thought of dominating a game such as that and having that many chances and not winning it,
yeah,
was just too hard to take.
I get you.
And then we're all getting these flashbacks, right? Which is, we talked about this before, ingrained in us, the Roy Hodgson Palace way, where you work so hard and then concede four within the last 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And that isn't us, right? We've got a better mentality than that these days. So I think, yeah, there was like a, can we turn this round? Have we got it in us? I certainly didn't feel like, from my point of view, like we had a leaky defence. I felt like there was a unique situation. Someone had got off their marker there and we gave them an opportunity. We'd held them out for 90 minutes. We were on 95 now or whatever, or early 90s. So yeah, it felt like there was kind of a feeling of justice needs to be done. The stadium got a lift. The players, especially Mateta and Lacroix, were kind of G-ing the crowd up.
Yeah.
Glasner started clapping along to the chants without realising he was doing it as well, which I love watching, where he's kind of clapping the players along and then realising that he's joined in with the chants. And it's quite funny. But there we go. Look, the atmosphere ramped up. And in the 96th minute, Palace attacked, Liverpool cleared the ball, and it ended up as a throw-in. This was the point that the whole stadium thought, right, 6 minutes added time, the throw-in happened at 95 point whatever. This was it. This was the last chance. Liverpool fans are going, watch. Hang on, like, we're over time now. And it's like, well, no, it's an attacking thing. And also, you just spent 27 minutes getting your last few players off on substitutions within this extra time. Pipe down. Chris Richards steps up, gets the towel out, cleans the ball thoroughly. Long throw incoming.
This is properly turning into 90s football this season, isn't it? Everyone, mate, with their long throws.
And I love it because we did the same thing we did in a game a couple of weeks ago. Chris Richards, he throws it in long and then it gets nodded on by the player at the front of the box.
Yep.
Last time that was Gaye. This time it's Hughes. But then Gaye gets another nod on and then lo and behold, Nketiah is not being marked by Frimpong because he thought that the ball was going to come out. So he went for a last minute attack, which meant that Nketiah was open. He chests it and volleys it straight between Alisson's leg. And do you know what? It's the biggest eruption I've ever seen from fans at Selhurst Park. That's why I said it was like a cup final.
Yeah, I can understand
it's
that.
Insane.
Yeah, I can understand that because it's just a melting pot of passion, of stress, of everything. When something like that happens, and to be fair to Nketiah, who you have given a hard time on this,
mate, pod, I have.
It was a wonderfully controlled finish. The ability to stay calm in that moment was very, very good. And to be fair, if you flip that the other way, if he'd missed that, I think that could have been his career over at Palace.
It would have just got chalked down with the rest of them, is the truth of the matter in my mind. But this is the funny thing about this, Neil, right? Limbs everywhere, as you said earlier. Everyone's ecstatic. Oh my God, just ref, blow the final whistle. What happens? VAR. What?
Yeah, I tell you what,
Nketiah couldn't be offside, could he, Neil? He bloody could, couldn't he? Because
so
he always is.
He's so close. When I saw the replays afterwards, obviously looking at it now, and I'm sure everyone at home has seen the pictures, that is, we're talking millimetres from being offside.
Yeah, and do you know what? If it was a frame later, he probably would have been offside. A frame earlier, he wasn't. Again, Liverpool, argue the hand of God the other side, mate, and we're talking, do you get what I mean? I think it worked out for the best, yeah. And yes, we did deserve that.
I agree, you know, it's hard for me to sit here and say it, but I don't think you can argue with the game as a whole going your way. When you look at the stats and you understand, I'm going to use this word sparingly, but I'm going to say it.
Go on.
When you look at how dominant I felt Palace were in an attacking sense, I thought, you know, we know that Liverpool were going to have the ball. That doesn't ever faze you guys anyway. I think, what was it, 72% almost, I think, was Liverpool's possession rate, which
it
is
didn't
fine.
Feel like that though, Neil, because no. I said that to Harry this morning, my son, and I was like, you know, we had 28% possession in that game. He was like, we can't have had 28%. We had the ball loads more than that.
But it doesn't feel like that, because actually then if you break that down a little bit more, and I think this is why it doesn't feel like that, okay? So your XG was higher. You had 2.45 compared to their 2.25. Your shots, okay, were on par, I would say, in the sense that Liverpool had 20, you had 16, but shots on target, you had seven.
Yeah.
They had four. And I think the other thing that makes you feel like they had more possession was because the touches inside the opposition box was pretty much half and half, 28 to Liverpool, 33 to Crystal Palace. So it felt like the opportunities, you know, were there for Palace to win the game. And lo and behold, they did.
Just a quick kind of reference to Glasner. Just made me absolutely wee myself at the end of the game with laughter, was that for the second time this season, Glasner's got so excited. I mean, bearing in mind the last time we talked about Glasner, he was so irate with SA that he'd thrown his jacket at one of his colleagues. Yeah. This time he was so excited the opposite direction that he thought that he was still a player and went to go and run to the corner flag again. And then after getting about 3 metres outside the box, you could just see this light bulb in his head going, oh, no, I'm not meant to be doing this. And then just did a complete U-turn and ran all the way back again. Very embarrassing, but brilliant. Just shows you how much he's kind of got that camaraderie in the team and everything. It was just lovely. Just a few quick shout-outs, because I know we're going to talk about another Brighton game in a minute. And it's going to, after the game. So we got Kamada, superb in this game. 21 out of 28 successful passes. That guy's taken some stick last year, right? Yeah. He was
mainly
super.
From you, mate.
Actually, I wouldn't say that. I first four or five games, yes. After that, no. I think he pretty much covered every blade of grass on that pitch. And when he had the ball, what I loved about it was, you know, when a player gets the ball, looks comfortable, and immediately head up, and it's like, where's it going?
Yeah.
And that was what I just let. It's the vision.
Yeah.
And I think he's getting that from Walton. Playing alongside him, that whole kind of, it's just brilliant. It just looks great. Lacroix, 7 duels won in the game. So solid. And we're not even going to mention Gaye. This is how good the rest of the team were. Mitchell, most crosses, most tackles, and most touches for Palace. Shining light for Palace at the moment. Like, brilliant.
His development on his attacking side now is really coming to the fore, isn't it?
Mate, just wonderful. So look, only our second league win in 17 meetings against Liverpool. Right, this is why we forget, right, because we're on this run, but that's still a massive achievement. And our first home win, we're against them since 2014. Palace are now, nil. Palace are 18 games unbeaten in all competitions, equaling the club record now set back in 1969.
Yeah.
I believe the last time that we went this far unbeaten in the league and we're this high up at this point in the league...
Yeah.
We finished in the top three, I believe. And that was the days of Wright and Bright, right? That was it, 91, 92?
That would have been, yeah, that would have been.
That was our most successful season we've ever had. I think it was second or third. And that season, we were sat in the top three now. So there is a thought of, what could happen here?
Mm.
Sat in second place. And obviously, as we speak on a Sunday afternoon, Neil, I can give you a bit of a breaking news that Newcastle are beating Arsenal. Because obviously now being a Palace fan, I'm taking very big interest in what happens with these big clubs now at the top of the table. So it looks like Arsenal aren't going to topple us off of second place.
Not so far.
Unless anything happens in the next 10 minutes, but we know that things can.
I mean, even if it doesn't, mate, you're going to still be in the Champions League's positions. You're still going to be in the top four. And
say that again.
No. And... with 6 only games gone, you're going to be doing well.
And we're the only team in the top tier. And I think, across a lot of leagues, that are unbeaten. Only team that are unbeaten.
Okay, mate.
Come on.
Like, look, I get it. I'm pleased for you that you're excited. There's a hell of a long way to go. And your tough part of the season starts now.
Do you know how excited I am? Is that I screenshotted the league table as quick as I could at 90 minutes, just in case anything changed elsewhere. And I screenshotted it because A, I was excited, and B, I knew that I might not see that again for a while. And I mean, officially, as well as I do.
Officially, you weren't top of the league until the end of the team. You know, all the teams have played that week, so yeah, you're still not going to be top of the league.
We're not top of the league, but we'll be. I believe as we sat on Sunday
at the moment. Yes, that's right. You're going to be second.
We're
in the
second
league.
With 12th, and obviously Tottenham had a chance to go second, but mucked it up at
they
Wolves.
They did. Yeah.
So can you believe Palace second, Sunderland fourth? Anyway, look, what a time to be a Palace fan. I am sorry. I know it's hard to listen to Brighton fans, but you're going to hear about all of your exploits in the second half as well. But I think, look, a good time to be a Palace and a Brighton fan right now.
No, I totally agree, mate. Look, both of us had really good weekends for the Premier League. It was clear that they were better than Liverpool on the day. I think Liverpool almost got out of jail, but, you know, Palace punished them. And I think that's fair. That's a fair position. I think there's a long way to go this season.
Well, that was what I was going to talk about, Neil. My last question of this bit of the podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, to someone who, let's be honest, probably couldn't give a monkey's about the success of Crystal Palace.
Absolutely less than a monkey's.
Well, no, this is the thing. So I'm interested about your, from a footballing perspective, right? Because you are a footballing man and you've got good knowledge of the game.
Mm.
At what point in the season do you go, you're going to be up there in that top four, top five, top six? Like,
well, give me a number. So are you saying top four?
Yeah.
Okay.
At what point do you think that top four break away and whoever's in there stays in there?
Let me flip that round the other way. This time last season, Nottingham Forest got off to a flyer.
Yeah.
Nottingham Forest were top of the league, challenging Liverpool all the way through up till Christmas. And then it got to, I think, end of February, and they were still hoping to be Champions League.
Yeah.
It got to end of May, and they were scraping into the Conference League.
Yeah.
So,
well, they collapsed though, didn't they? They had a monumental collapse.
They collapsed and they didn't have a European football to play.
Mm.
So they had
had
a bigger squad than Crystal Palace. So my point is that, look, you have got a fantastic first 11 or 12. You have got a way of playing. You've got a very good manager. If you are lucky this season, if you don't get lots of injuries, if you get easy games in the cups, you know, things like that, if luck is on your side, like it was for the two-thirds of Nottingham Forest season last season, you have an opportunity to get to, you know, a qualify for European football in the league. So I think you have an opportunity. Do I think it's going to happen? In all honesty, mate, no, I don't think in the league you're going to be able to withstand the stresses and strains with the size of squad you've got. However, the one caveat I would give to that is you've got a transfer window in January.
Yeah.
If they're willing to spend money, if they're willing to bring numbers in, and you are still, come December, January time, you're still in that top six, then that may change.
But don't forget, Glasner's got a contract signed between now and then.
I'm not sure that's going to happen.
I reckon a lot of that's going to rely on what happens in January. But I think if we're up in their echelons, they will spend some money. And oh my God, I mean, this is the funny thing about it, right? I'm just watching and listening to Palace fans online and stuff like this, and we're fully aware, as everyone reminds us, we're six games in.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
We're fully aware of that. But it's funny how all of a sudden it's taken us to beat Liverpool this week for people to actually understand what we've achieved. And that ridiculous run that we've been on, how long it is since we haven't lost a game and how well we're playing. I believe only for the first time this week, Neil, got credit on Match of the Day last night, properly got credit from them three that are on there for what's been achieved. And even they are saying, well, actually, the sky's the limit, isn't it? Because you think about it, this run's been going for more than the last five games. This ability to win games and get late goals and hold on to late draws and all the other bits and pieces. So I wouldn't rule us out of it, but if three or four of our first teamers go down, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's see.
Look, I still think Brighton are going to end up higher than Palace. Obviously, I'm a Brighton fan. That's how it works. Even at the beginning of this season, with the points they are at the moment and the gap that there is, I still think Brighton are going to finish higher. And the reason for
with your
that,
inability to keep a clean sheet.
It's especially because of that. The only reason I say that now is still because I think the European journey that you guys are on is still going to have to hit an effect. We'll see, won't we? We'll see what
happens. I think you'll finish top half. But let's see. All I can say, Neil, is Champions League, oh, here God. We come.
We'll see you after the break, everyone, for this extra long and annoying version of Seagull Eagle.
Oh, yes!
Welcome back, Neil. I finished my chant now. I've stopped singing. Part two.
I was getting a headache. I really was. Do you know, there's something we probably should talk about.
Go on.
Before we go on to other things. And that was at the end of the Chelsea, well, not at the end of the Chelsea game, but during the Chelsea game, when Minté went down with his supposed head injury from that high kick, there was a lot of kerfuffle in the penalty box.
Did it kick off?
Yeah, as always it does. Yeah, it always does. And one of the strangest things to me, though, was the fact that Robert Sanchez was trying to be a peacemaker rather than actually usually what he is a fire starter. So Ooh. It was, it went properly off. I think there was a few things. I don't know whether the FA will look at it, but Caicedo looks as if he, I would say headbutt might be a bit strong, but head pushed into Van Hecker in some way. Van Hecker went down like ridiculously, obviously on purpose. And then Badiashile from Chelsea took offence to that, tried to drag him up, literally pick him up. Dunk got involved. Everyone got involved, all on the penalty spot. This
Do you think there might be some retrospective?
Well, I mean, VAR must have looked at it, so I'm not sure, but
They do that, though, don't they, after the game.
There was a lot going on, and it just sparked it even more because obviously at that point it was 1-1 and it just created more of a... And there's this constant running battle, obviously, with things like that. We had it last time we were at the Bridge, similar situation near the end of the game and stuff. And it was just... I thought I'd better mention it because otherwise people might be listening going, what about? But I tried to stick to the football, but... With the Chelsea game, we can never just stick to the football. There's always something. So,
oh, absolutely. And I think the other there was something we missed actually about the Palace Liverpool game.
What's that?
A really important part of it actually, yeah. Which was that a little bit of a concern for one of the Palace fans, which was that I really struggled doing his shoelaces up. And I just, I really felt for him that he just kept getting disrupted by the Liverpool coach while he was trying to do his shoelaces up.
To be fair, even as a Brighton fan, I did love that. Anyone that hasn't seen it, please check social media, X, wherever you go for some clips.
It's just brilliant, isn't it? And also just by the fact that he's got his mobile phone in his hand, and he puts his mobile phone in the middle of the road.
Then
kneels down to do his shoelaces up.
Knowing the coach is
centimetres from his bum. And then takes ages doing his shoelaces. But he's not even doing his shoelaces up. That's the funniest thing about it. He hasn't even...
No, it's complete fake.
He's pretending
fake.
To he's do just, it above
do you know
his
what,
shoelaces.
Do you know what made me laugh the most, though, was the fact that he does it, right? And everyone's like, oh, that's funny. Yeah. Right? So then he finishes his thing.
Yeah.
And he stands up. And he picks up his phone and he goes to walk and he takes two steps and then goes down again.
And then the coach just edges it a little bit closer.
The coach is just literally just behind him.
The whole thing lasts about 3 minutes.
Oh, it's just golden. It really
is. And you could just see that the coach driver is just like, oh, I'm not paid enough for this.
Yeah.
I'm not paid enough for this.
It was very funny. It was.
The wonders of our ancient stadium and the benefits at play there. Just
totally.
Wonderful. Anyway, there you go. Right, come on. You've been waiting to talk about this.
What's that?
Epic game.
Oh, you mean the...
Against the mighty Barnsley.
Carabao Cup last Tuesday. Yeah, I need to talk about it. I would have glossed over it a little bit if it had been a bit more boring, but it wasn't boring, mate. For the second round in a row, we put 6 past the opposition.
I wonder when, we don't know, unless you do, but how often that happens, that you do 6-0 2 games in a row?
It's the first time in League Cup history.
Neil, well done for your research.
You're very welcome.
I commend you.
Yeah, first time in League Cup history that a side has put 6 goals or won 6-0 in 2 rounds.
It's phenomenal. So, yeah. I mean, it's been helped by who you've been playing, but
of course.
Also, though, I mean, let's be honest, there's been some teams out there that have struggled to beat some of these lowly sides.
Man United.
Exactly. I mean, Palace just about scraped it for on penalties with Millwall, yeah. So we can't, yeah, fair play, mate, fair play.
It was, I personally, as a bit of a football nerd, these are the games at the beginning of the season I love to watch.
Yeah.
Because you get the opportunity of seeing other players, because you know most of the time who's going to start, and you get to see the new signings or the young kids or whatever.
You got a lot of them, haven't you?
We have got a lot of them, mate. And this was, I just thought it was a really good opportunity, and I wondered how he was going to change the side. He made a couple of extra changes, but the starting lineup, so we had Veltman stealing goal, obviously, but Veltman, Boscagli and Coppola again at the back, which is great, getting their opportunities. Kadioglu at right back. And then Milner at the back, centre of midfield. And this time, Carlos Baleba, he's put him straight back in after dragging him off against Spurs at halftime. He put him straight back in, which is really good, I think, because he tried to get him the minutes, tried to get him playing against maybe a team that he felt he could dominate, you know, and actually get a bit more comfortable with things. So that was a good start. Tommy Watson got his first official start. Danny Welbeck up front. Diego Gomez, which I think we all know what happened by now, was in the little hole behind Simas as well, was playing. So it was a really sort of interesting formation. He made do with the players he had, and Gomez was pretty much sort of on the right wing, but every time we attacked, he came in almost as a 10, sort of trying to cut inside all the time, which gave Kadioglu the chance just to really bomb it up and down that right. We sort of ended up, because we had so much of the ball, we ended up pretty much with 60% possession. Well, it actually doesn't sound that much, but the possession that we had, 16 shots on target, 16 shots, 12 on target, compared to zero from Barnsley. We just didn't give them.
So you had a 1-in-2 hit rate.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
It was fantastic. I'm not going to go into the ins and outs of it completely. Everyone's probably seen what's happened. I think we need to stop though for a second and say Diego Gomez. I think a lot of people outside of Brighton wouldn't have known who he was. Although he's scored a couple of goals, he's been in and out the side a little bit.
Who is he now?
Paraguay midfielder. We bought him from Inter Miami last season. He was playing with Messi, and we brought him in, and he's been in and out of the side. Okay, so he's one of these players that just has legs. He just wants to run constantly, and sometimes he doesn't quite think before he does. And that's just, you know, some sort of players always, they're very, very youthful, and they don't always think things through. But on Tuesday night against Barnsley, he was everywhere across that front. He was closing down everyone. And the first goal was a lovely little tap-in. He came in, sliding in the centre of the penalty box from an assist from Tommy Watson. The first of three assists for Tommy Watson on the night.
Yeah, had a good game, didn't
which it? Is great. Yeah, it's really good to see him. One thing about Tommy Watson was he wasn't like outstanding. Like, he didn't do anything that you'd go, oh my God, got off your seat and fantastic.
Did his job though.
He did his job, Andy, exactly that. His passing, his running, everything. He's starting to look more and more ready for a start, in my opinion, in the first team. But we'll see. He got a full 90 minutes, by the way, which is really good for his legs. I mean, Simas, one thing I didn't realise, I hadn't seen enough of him, but he played...
He's a striker, right?
Simas, yeah, sorry. So he's one of our new Greek strikers. Yeah,
but he's a striker, but he didn't actually score, did he?
He didn't score, and he was... So it was interesting because the way they played, because there was a front four, again, they still played the same style, though. Even though they had two strikers, they had the ability where they were dropping in and out into that sort of number 10 role. But they were mostly concentrating themselves on closing down Barnsley, just making sure every time Barnsley had the ball, as you can see from zero shots on target, they didn't get a chance. They didn't have that. And Simas, what I would say about him is he put a real shift in.
6-0 win and the striker don't score. Do you get what I'm saying? It's not a derogatory comment, but you come off and you'd be a bit like, hang on a minute.
Well, it was a 6-0.
If not today, win.
Well, last round, 6-0, he scored two goals in his debut, thank you.
Yeah, but I mean, come on. 6-0.
Don't try and rain on my parade, mate. It's not going to happen. Gomez scores four goals of the six.
It's mad.
First goal, a little tap in. Second goal, wonderful hit from the edge of the box, just running onto it.
I did see that one.
The third one, I mean, I don't even know what happened in the third one. No one was expecting what he did on the third one. Again, just comes off the defender. He's near the centre. He's like near the centre circle. And he just half volleys it straight past everyone into the back of the net. That, I mean, the third one was just ridiculous. And then the fourth one later in the game in the second half, a really good little move, including Welbeck passing it through. And that was just a really nice, classy finish. You know, he got through the defence, had the keeper to beat, put it past the keeper on his near post. And, you know, it's just one of those sort of things you look at and go, oh, I was there, or oh, yeah, I remember that night when. So I was trying to think back, and I remember as a kid, it would have been in the early 90s at the Goldstone Ground. I was there to see Brian Wade, a striker we got, play his debut against Newcastle, and he scored four goals for the Albion.
And wow.
There's only one player in between that moment and this moment that scored four goals for the Albion. Do you know who it was? Can you guess?
Glenn Murray.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. So it was
traitor.
It was a really good performance from Brighton. I won't go on about it because actually, you know, obviously it was difficult when you know the opposition you're playing, but we still had to beat them.
Mate, you should be proud. Jokes aside, 2-6-0 back-to-back wins. That shows intent. It shows you're taking it seriously. And it shows that you've got great depth in your squad. You've got the ability to go on some great cup runs. You've got the ability to fight on more than one front.
Yeah.
And this proves it. Lo and behold, 2-6-0 wins. I mean, crikey.
Yeah.
So fair play. You can't take that away from you.
Thank you, mate. I appreciate that. And I think there's probably three takeaways I would have from the game. And that is, one, Kostoulas. He came on for about 20, 25 minutes. Mm. Still looks way off, in my opinion.
Okay.
I don't think we're going to see him in the first team anytime soon. Boscagli at centre defence. He's so classy. I'm surprised we still haven't seen him in the Premier League. I get that it's, you know, it's difficult to stop, you know, and say, oh, I want to drop my captain, Lewis Dunk. But
there will be a time, though.
It's got to be, and it's got to be coming soon, because he is by far the classiest centre-back we've got. And, you know, he's naturally left-sided, and you can just see it.
Things like that happen if you're injury, Neil. Like, yeah, Dunk could get injured, he'll get his place, and he won't come back again.
I think that could happen. And then last but not least, I think I was just pleased with the overall performance, and in particular, the nature that we didn't stop. We didn't want to give Barnsley an easy go. We got to the last 15 minutes and we still scored a few more goals. Mm. You know, Harry Howe, by the way, got on the pitch, got his first ever goal in his career for a professional side.
Really?
So congratulations to Harry Howe. On the 75th minute, he came on, and, you know, 87th minute, another assist from Watson. Harry Howe edged the box, left-footed curling shot. Mm. You know, so I'm really pleased for him. Ayari gets the last goal, you know, and that's like 89 minutes and we're still trying to shoot, still trying to score. So I just enjoyed the nature that they didn't want to stop. They wanted to keep going. And it felt like quite a few players on that pitch were doing what hopefully you should be doing, which is fighting for your place, showing the manager that you want to play. So really good. And I was absolutely, you know, really high as a kite thinking, this is great. We're going to go on a huge cup run and then we get the draw.
Yeah, well, one thing's for sure. We don't need to look at the stats to see what happens if you win 3 6-0 games back to back.
Yeah, I've got a feeling that's not going to happen in the next game in the cup.
Who have you got, Neil?
We got drawn away to... Oh, let me just check the side. I've not heard of them before. Oh, Arsenal.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, it's been a nice cup run. I mean, that's where Palace got knocked out last year in that same cup.
So who did you draw? You beat Millwall, obviously, on penalties 2 weeks ago.
Yep. Liverpool away.
See, I would laugh at that, having not understood what happened this weekend. So,
It's hard to take that, because I wouldn't say we've had the easiest of runs on it. I think you probably can't argue your one in terms of that you've played two lowly teams and then you've come up against Arsenal. I guess it kind of. But do you know what? The one thing is for sure, Neil, is that this year rather than any other year, you just don't know what's going to happen.
Drawing Arsenal away, I'm not that worried about it. Look, it is what it is. We've got them in the cup. That's just the way it is. All you can hope is that, you know, like a lot of these big sides, it's the least of the competitions that everyone wants to win. It is, isn't it? For Liverpool, for everyone, they look at the League Cup as the worst of all of the competitions that they're in, especially the ones that are in the Champions League.
No, it is. But let's not forget, this next lot, if you win this game, so if you win your game at Arsenal, we win our game at Liverpool,
yeah,
we're in the last eight.
Yeah, I don't think we've actually gone past the fourth round since the 70s.
Oh my God. Really?
Yeah, League Cup has just not been something we've ever done very well in at all. So it's unbelievable in that sense. But if we can get through Arsenal, I agree. I think we've got a good chance then, because I think the squad builds confidence as well. Look, I don't know. We'll see. It's
mate, the point being, one more game, we're in the last eight. Yeah. That's something that we have both got a really good chance of winning. And what happens if you win it? Do you get into Europe?
You get a Conference League spot. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
So this, let's be honest, Neil, that could be your best route into Europe for next year.
Oh, definitely. It's like Palace's. Like, you know, winning the Conference League is your easiest chance of European football you're going to have, you know. And I don't think any of the Brighton fans would knock another trip to Wembley. They would love that.
Of course not.
And the manager's clearly wanting to win this. That's why we're winning 6-0, two on a run. So,
mate, a cup's a
we'll
cup.
We'll see. Absolutely, I agree, mate.
We will not win it. I want to win it.
We all want to win it. What's next? Should we talk about? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, talking of winning things, you seem to think we're the favourites for this Conference League thingy.
I don't think I seem to. I mean, look, check any bookie. I'm sure they'll tell you that Palace are the favourites for the Conference League, of which you have your very first fixture in the Conference League proper.
Yep.
This week, I should say now.
It's Thursday.
So Thursday, the 2nd of October. If you're listening, it may be underway. You may be on your trip.
We may have already lost it. I mean, it's recording when you're listening.
You may be stuck at the airport. Anything could be happening. So you have got Dynamo Kyiv.
Yep.
But obviously, you're not going to be playing in Kyiv.
No, it's being played in Poland.
Right. Okay. So talk to me about it, mate.
I mean, this is the bit that I struggle with.
Go on. What do you mean?
Well, what did you say about, you know, clearly favourites, all this kind of stuff, right? Let's not forget, right? They are the reigning Ukrainian champions. They are the only one of Palace's opponents that have already won major trophies, right? They've won the UEFA Cup. They've won the Super Cup.
Yeah, not last week, though,
Andy.
They've
won 17 domestic titles. They've got the largest fan base in Ukraine.
You just beat Liverpool, the champions.
Wait for this one. They finished unbeaten across 30 league games last year.
In the Ukrainian league.
They didn't win. They didn't lose a game last year.
Andy, stop it. Stop it. You know very well Palace are the favourites to win this competition.
They lost to Paphos in the Champions League qualification 2-0.
Andy.
They dropped down to the Europa League. They played Tel Aviv over two aggregate games, right?
Doesn't matter,
They won
Andy.
One of the games. They got a man sent off and ended up losing 4-1. So they've now dropped down to the Conference League.
Where's your confidence? You think you're going Champions League a minute ago when you were beating Liverpool. You're thinking you're going to be top four in the Premier League, the hardest league in the world with the biggest clubs in the world. And you think that Dynamo Kyiv is going to be a tough ask. Is that what you're saying?
No, we're going to win 2-0.
Right, so stop.
I'm just saying that the way you're talking about this Conference League, it's a little bit like you playing Barnsley on a Wednesday night. They've got a proper trophy cabinet, unlike Barnsley.
Name me the last time an English side hasn't got to the final in the Conference League.
Oh, mate, I've never even taken any notice in Europe because I've never had to. I've got no idea, Neil.
They've always been in the final because it's the easiest.
How did you get on when you played in it?
We never played in the Conference League. We played in the step up from that, mate. Europa League. You should try qualifying for it sometime.
No, we did. We just didn't get in it.
No, but it's unfortunate. We got to the last 16 of the Europa League.
The last 16.
She got knocked out. Yeah, okay. We topped our group and got to the last 16.
And then got knocked
the
out.
The last 16
Who
of the Europa
out?
League. Roma, a big side.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Nice try. So,
and what about this year? Who have you got?
So you're trying to worry about Dynamo Kyiv when five minutes ago you were saying you're going to be Champions League.
No. All I'm saying is they are a proper club. They've got some very good players. And I don't think... And look, we're going away. Let's not forget this. We're going away as well. I do think that we will win. I think we're going to win 2-0.
Yeah.
But they're a good team. Jokes aside, Neil, they are a good team.
They're not a good team, but it's a hard... in Europe to play away. No matter what happens, whoever you're playing, it
is hard. I think they're our second biggest test. I think Strasbourg are going to be the ones that we've got to worry about. We'll talk about
that
later.
Possibly.
But I think, who I believe now, Ben Chilwell's playing for.
Strasbourg, yeah. So anyone that Chelsea want or has or had have at any point of playing for Strasbourg, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, Dynamo Kiev, I believe it's on TNT Sports, but God knows it probably end up on Channel 5 last minute like the other one did the other week.
No, this will definitely be on TNT Sports. It's an early kickoff as well, isn't it? 5:45.
Yeah, 5:45 British Standard Time.
Okay, all seriousness for a second.
Yep.
So cool. You think what will be the score on
2-0.
Thursday? 2-0 to Palace.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Well, mate, we're riding high, aren't we?
I agree, mate. I totally agree.
It's an insult. Why are we in the Conference League? Should be in the Champions League.
Let's not get started on that.
I really wanted to go to one of the away games, but got a busy week at work next week anyway, so I'm not going to get away with that. But yeah, I wish them luck, and I'm hoping that, yeah, I mean, you never know. I'll probably end up going to see Shamrock Rovers or something in Ireland.
Still an away game, mate, in Europe.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
It's not really, though, is it?
It's not Marseille like we did, or Ajax.
I'll go to the final, Neil.
Or,
it's fine.
Roma,
did you go to the final?
Like we did. But, you know, it's a cup that at least you've got... You
only
should win,
a Brighton fan can show off about a competition that they didn't win. What are you talking about, mate?
Listen, come on. You can talk about it when you're in it. Until then, can't talk about it. What else have we got going on? We've got previews of other games we need to talk about, probably, don't we? So
you're playing Wolves.
Oh, yes. On Sunday, I think our game is. Yeah, we've got Wolves. Did all right last season there. I went to that game last season. Really good performance. Brian Gruder got his first goal. Wolves got their first point this weekend against
Spurs.
Nearly
a first win.
Yeah, they've. Did you notice what he did, actually? The manager, he did something quite unique that I haven't heard a lot of managers do these days, and that is that they played... Obviously, they've had no points so far in the league, Wolves. And then this midweek in the League Cup, they got Everton, and he changed his side. He made like 9, 10, 11 changes, and they beat Everton. So he just decided to keep it. So he kept that side and said, no, forget you lot that didn't do me well and didn't get any points. I'm keeping the side that beat Everton in the League Cup. And yeah, I mean, they did well. They got a point against Spurs, got their first point. But we've done pretty well at Wolves. I'm still expecting us to do something there. If we play the way we played against Spurs, if we play the way we played against Chelsea with that fight, both of them, I think we'll be fine. I think we'll still get 3 points. That's my plan. I think it's quite strange to have 2 away games, 1 on the trot as well, which is a strange thing to feel. But hopefully the Chelsea game has given them confidence, and I'm expecting a win. I think we should be beating teams like Wolves. I've highlighted that Wolves are my favourites for going down out of the remaining teams that didn't come up. So, I'm hoping so. And if I have to give a prediction, well, we're not going to keep a clean sheet. We never do. So I'll go 2-1 Brighton. What about you? Who have you got?
We're similar to you, Neil. This is what I worry about. I worry about the whole, you beat someone like Liverpool, and then you come across an Everton.
Oh, Everton.
And it's a bit like you. You're on the run now, and then you come across Wolves. And then you're like, oh, we should be winning that game. And do you know what I'm saying?
Never works like that, mate.
It never works like that.
No.
But yeah, no, look, we've got Everton.
I heard something the other day, actually, about Everton Palace, that you don't have a really good run against Everton. Apparently, they're a bit of your bogey team, aren't they?
Well... Our last meeting was back in Feb.
Right.
And we lost 2-1.
Mm.
That was kind of a... that was a bit of an anomaly on our form back in them days. Head-to-head, though, we played 24 games. Everton have won 11, Palace have won 3.
Wow.
And we've drawn 10.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of draws. But
sounds
a lot
like
of
a bogey team to me, though. Like 3 out of 24.
Yeah, a lot of that is... historic, older game. I think there's been a lot of draws in recent times with Everton, but then I think Everton were the draw specialists at one point. So,
it's a different side as well this season, isn't it, Everton?
Oh, cool.
They're looking very different, much more attacking, a lot more balance to them.
Yeah, but I mean, they've just lost to Wolves and Liverpool in the last 2 games. They're playing West Ham on Monday.
That's 3 points.
I don't see anything else apart from us hopefully continuing the run, getting a minimum out of a point out of this.
Yeah.
In order to keep up our Champions League form.
Oh, God.
If anyone actually believes this that's listening, by the way, you don't know me. Because
he does mean it.
I genuinely do not believe
we're going
to end up in the Champions
League.
Honestly
thinks they're going to win the league. That's what he thinks.
No.
He does, everyone.
Let's see what happens.
All right, mate. Fair enough.
Wow. What an episode, Neil. so much to get through.
I appreciate that was a long episode, everyone. Thanks for sticking with us.
Only because Brighton had two games this week.
Yeah, that's what it was.
That was the extra hour. anyway, that's it, as Neil says, for another episode of Seagull Eagle. Thank you so much for listening.
Make sure you follow the show so you don't miss the next episode when it drops. We'll be back next week to review Palace's first official Conference League tie with the mighty Dynamo Kyiv. Wolves v Brighton and Everton v Palace.
Can't wait for that. You'll find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook and X. Please follow our socials. Otherwise, we're just wasting our time. So that would be lovely to see you on there. Just search Seagull Eagle and get the conversation started.
Drop us an email at seagulleaglepodcast@gmail.com.
Until then, we will see you next week.
Eagles!
Seagulls!
We are Champions League. See, we are Champions League.